You're with Sounds Good. It's our midday music and community conversation program. I'm Tracy Ross in studio with Todd Hatton.
Hey, thanks, Tracy. A little over 2 weeks ago, we heard from Dr. Dwayne Bolin and Dr. David Pizzo of Murray State University's History Department, who are among the 72 Kentucky history professors who signed a letter calling for the removal of the statue of Confederate President and Kentucky native Jefferson Davis from the Capitol Rotunda in Frankfort. The letter went to state legislators Governor Steve Beshear and the Kentucky Historical Properties Advisory Commission, which early this August voted 7-2 to keep Davis right where he is. But that doesn't mean the debate's gone away. And joining me to respond to the letter and to Drs. Bolin and Pizzo is Dr. Tom Heider, former Director of Heritage Defense for the Sons of Confederate Veterans and longtime Sons of Confederate Veterans member Dr. Don Duncan. Welcome, gentlemen.
Welcome.
I'll just jump right in. Davis is one of five Kentuckians represented in the rotunda. There's also Whig Congressman Henry Clay, physician Ephraim McDowell, Senate Majority Leader, and Vice President Al Barkley, and of course Abraham Lincoln. Now, obviously, you both take a great deal of exception to moving Davis out of the Capitol. Why do you believe he should stay? Dr. Heider, we'll start with you.
Well, that can be answered at two or three different levels very easily, Todd. The first and foremost is that when Kentucky was asked in the Bluegrass poll, a far from being right-wing organization up in the Bluegrass, what Kentuckians thought about it, 73% said it ought to be left right where it is. And so without regard to our personal or organizational preferences, the people of Kentucky want it to stay right where it is. And in every racial group, you see that kind of thing. In every social group, in every income group, all Kentuckians everywhere want it to stay. So I find it a little odd that 72 supposed history teachers and professors think that their opinions are more important than 73% of all Kentuckians. And that's the easy answer, is it ought to be left alone because Kentuckians think it should be left alone.
What do you think that that's the nature of their attachment to Jefferson Davis? And if you do, can you explain the nature of that attachment?
I don't know that it's a matter of attachment, but I think you could apply that same reasoning to everybody up there. I'll imagine if you walk across campus and ask any random sample of students who Ephraim McDowell is, you'd be real surprised to find 10% who could identify the man and who could put him in the right half century when he did his work. Mm-hmm. Yet the idea that Ephraim McDowell represents is important and is in the rotunda for the very good reason that any teacher of history can lead a class through that rotunda and say, this is Ephraim McDowell, and then spell out in detail the wonderful medical advances that he's directly responsible for.
Right.
The same's true of Henry Clay. Mm-hmm. Everybody says, oh, Clay, yeah, isn't that what Muhammad Ali's name was before he changed it? Well, Henry Clay, much more importantly than having the same name as a boxer, was the man who invented the American plan. Mm-hmm. The American plan called for the opening up of the West, the Old West, South and North, the whole east of the Mississippi United States, in a way that would use the inherent navigability of Southern rivers to fund Northern expansion. And that plan, the American plan, Clay's American plan, is what resulted directly in the war. The war was fought over exactly that. So having him there as the originator of the American plan, and Lincoln and Davis, who fought the war over it, is so historically important that I can't imagine why a history professor wouldn't yearn to have those three in the same rotunda.
Well, that leads to my next question. Dr. Bolin suggested putting President Davis in the Clark Museum, where that gets more foot traffic and that has greater opportunities for interpretation. Because Davis was, I mean, you can't paint him white or black. He was a very complicated figure. And so putting him in that museum allows for more opportunities to kind of unpack him than having him in the rotunda of a government office building.
The Rotunda is a very special place. The Rotunda is a place for firsts and mosts and superlatives. And Lincoln is a given as a superlative, no matter what our individual opinion of him might be, and some of us don't have a very high one, he is considered a superlative. Mm-hmm. There is only one. Henry Clay, the great compromiser, there's only one.
Right.
Jefferson Davis, the only president of the Confederate States. Mm. The history that those three bring to bear, being connected to Kentucky in our Capitol Rotunda, all there at the same time, is unmatchable. I don't care where else you put them. If you break up that trio, it detracts from the history of the Commonwealth of Kentucky.
Well, you said something very interesting just a few minutes ago about the idea that is this these figures represent. And you know, looking at them, I confess I really hadn't thought of them as like totems or avatars. I mean, symbols, really, larger symbols.
Precisely.
What are the ideas that the Davis statue represents?
You know, they represent exactly what the war was about. And that is a teaching point that I, as a once-upon-a-time history teacher, can't hardly give up the opportunity to talk about, but I'm going to try because you already told us you'd like us to stay on why the statue needs to stay instead of what our philosophies are. But Jefferson Davis represents, he is an avatar, if you will, of the Southern cause. The Southern cause is what America's all about. The South fought the war for precisely the same reasons that George Washington and John Adams and Thomas Jefferson and Payne and all of those people fought their war a couple of generations earlier. The war is also known not as just the Civil War, although that gets used a lot. It's been called the War of Rebellion, which we argue, and Davis argued, it certainly was not. We like the name War for Southern Independence because had the South won, it certainly would have been referred to as the War for Southern Independence. The South strongly and deeply believed in state sovereignty. The South believed that individual states, every individual state, was a sovereign entity and that it should be allowed to function as such. Lincoln and the Republicans, the United States, if you will, believed that we were a single republic. We are now. If you don't believe it, look around at what's going on in current politics. Mm-hmm. We have a federal government that is, in fact, capable of and has recently taken over local police forces so that they can implement federal whatever, I mean, federal mandates. We have a federal government that can reach into your pocket and mine and does every April the 15th and take money. That idea would have caused Clay, Davis, Lincoln, and no telling how many other people to retch in disbelief had they ever offered the possibility of the federal government being able to tax you or me as individuals. The South fought against that. The South believed that individual states had the right to withdraw from such an arrangement, if in fact such an arrangement existed. Did it? Well, we can argue about that for a long, long time.
Yes.
The southern states, the seven southern states, not the 13, there's at least two different confederacies that you have to talk about. The original confederacy consisted of seven states that withdrew from the Union. Abraham Lincoln maintained that they had never withdrawn, that it's not possible to withdraw, that joining the Union was an irrevocable step, and that once you were a member of the Union, you were stuck. In fact, he argued that the Union created most of the states and that there was one country with political subdivisions called states. Mm-hmm. The South believed that the Union was formed by 13 independent sovereign states and had been joined by another 30 in the process. And at each state, Louisiana, Texas, Arkansas, Kentucky, were themselves each sovereign and had a right to withdraw from the federal Union and do whatever they wished. That's what the South fought for. Mm-hmm. And so it's a very different situation from believing there was a rebellion against the central government. The South thought it was asserting its rights to go its own way. The individual states believed that. The seven first, and then six more after Lincoln invaded.
Right. So, well, how do you respond to people saying, to people making the assertion that the war was about slavery? And that's where they pull up short with Jefferson Davis, because they point to the logical conclusion of a Confederate victory and say there's the continued existence of chattel slavery in the North American continent.
It continued after the war as it was. Slavery did not end by the war or even during the war. Slavery ended by the 13th Amendment.
Right.
The 13th Amendment was not passed until the war was over and was not ratified until Reconstruction was essentially over. There, a very strong legal case can be made that the 13th Amendment was never legally ratified, because the Southern states, with puppet governments, ratified the 13th Amendment. The only way they could get it ratified was to bring the Southern states on board as ratifying it. Many of the Northern and Midwestern states wanted nothing to do with the 13th Amendment. Mm. And so they brought the South under Reconstruction in to ratify the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments. And they did. And so their law, nobody argues with that anymore. That's history. That's why we have the subject. We study that.
Right.
But that you can't extend to them our modern 20th and 21st century sensibilities. That's not what was going on. The war did not end with Appomattox. And slavery did not end with the war.
Well, that kind of leads to my next question, because I'm curious to know if there was more to this debate than perhaps the legacy of one man, even if it's Jefferson Davis. Because, well, I say this because some people have talked to me about this being about more about Southern memory and Southern culture than it is about the historical specifics of what Jefferson Davis did and where he did it and how. So do you get that impression that this is a very freighted conversation that's going on about this statue?
I think what's going on with the statue is a simple case of political correctness run amok. That's my opinion. Other people have theirs, and it may be very different. I think it's very strange that people decided to fuss about the Jefferson Davis statue within hours of the South Carolina massacre, where a misguided, probably insane individual murdered a lot of people in a house of God. And you note the collar I'm wearing indicates that I have some sensibilities in that direction.
Right.
And we have politicians of every party stripe immediately coming on board to scream about moving battle flags and moving statues and all of that. It's political correctness. That's all it is. And when you have the left, when the question comes up, first they say, well, it's offensive to some. Okay, I'll buy that. It probably is, but not to 73% of Kentuckians. Mm-hmm. And then their next thing is, well, it's racist. We ought to have somebody black in the rotunda. Not my fault. Not the South's fault. Not Jefferson Davis's fault. I agree. But I think we ought to have a memorial to the thousands of black Southerners, tens of thousands, who fought with the South.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody ever mentions them. We put statues up to the 54th Massachusetts, but we ignore the tens of thousands of black Southerners who fought. And we ignore the tens of thousands of black Southerners out there today who are firm supporters of the South, who adopt the battle flag, and who admire Jefferson Davis. Their voices aren't heard because of political correctness. And that's what the argument is about with the statue. Tom Hyder's opinion.
Okay. Well, my last question is there a way to separate being Southern and with an understanding of Confederate history? I mean, because I think you could make a very strong case that it is possible to be proud of being Southern and what Southerners have achieved without even getting near the American Civil War, that you can talk about science and the arts and social justice issues, all of which you've seen Southerners play a very leading role. Is it possible to appreciate one without appreciating the other?
Todd, in every state except South Carolina, there was at least one regiment of Union soldiers raised who fought for the North against the Confederacy. Is it possible to be descended from one of those people? Probably 20% of us are. Sure.
Right.
Absolutely. It's important to be anti-Confederate and still proud of being Southern.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very unusual. It's much more common that those descendants of Yankee soldiers who were Southerners changed their ancestor's service in the years following the war because they really realized they were misguided then and they're misguided now.
My real last question is, so now that the commission has said that they've taken the vote, the statue isn't going anywhere, do either of you know if they've heard anything more about any effort to move it? Dr. Duncan?
I haven't, but Dwayne Bolin last time said that he still thought that it would eventually be moved. So there's no doubt that there will be further discussion about it.
But nothing's come up so far.
The Speaker of the Kentucky House has pre-filed a bill for the General Assembly in January to move it by legislative fiat. Now, that doesn't mean anything except that he's pre-filed a bill. That happens often, and there are lots of them. But Mr. Stumbo wants it moved and intends to try to do it legislatively.
Well, we shall see. Dr. Don Duncan, Dr. Tom Hyder, thank you very much for coming up.
Well, thank you for having us. We're delighted.
You're with Murray State's 91.3 WKMS. We sound good because of listeners like you.